Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. I'm back in Studio A with my guest this morning, as I mentioned, from San Juan County, from the Juvenile Services Department. Director Bowen Belt is here. Good morning. Thanks for coming in this morning. Great to have you here.
Yeah, thank you, Scott. Appreciate
you bet.
It.
Also, your deputy director is here with us this morning as well. That's Shane Starr. Shane, good morning to you. Thank you for coming in.
Good morning. Thank you, Scott.
You bet. Appreciate you guys both coming in to talk about the work that you do. And to start with, give me a little idea on the department, the Juvenile Services Department. This is what the county has available for youth in the community who have come into contact with law enforcement and they are kind of needing to be in a secure location as they await the criminal justice system. Is that kind of where we start?
Yes. Yeah, that's a good overview. The Juvenile Services Department, you know, we've been up there for 2 decades now.
Has it really been 2 decades? Holy smokes. You're talking about the campus on Andrea Drive.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. 2 decades. And during that time, you know, things have changed a little, but, you know, one constant is there's always been a juvenile detention center, there's always been a crisis shelter, and we've always contracted and operated a residential treatment program.
Right. Those things have been there for a long time.
Yes.
And talk to me a little bit about the age range of youth that can go to those facilities.
So in the state of New Mexico, for detention, by statute, no one under the age of 12 can be detained. So we serve in detention 12 to 18. At the crisis shelter, those kids that we serve there are 9 to 18, and then the residential treatment program serves 13 years old up to 18.
Gotcha. And not every county in New Mexico has a facility like San Juan County does. There's only a few in the state, right?
Well, actually, no other county has a campus like San Juan County. We are unique that we have all those services in one location. I want to mention, too, that at that same location, we also have district court that handles all the juvenile cases. Also in our building is juvenile probation. And so to have a shelter, a detention center, a treatment program, and those other agencies all co-located is unique to San Juan County.
It sounds like there was some planning involved in some
Absolutely.
of those things.
Some folks put some real thought into it.
Right. But as far as the detention facilities go, it is one of only, what, 4 in the state?
One of only 4. Bernalillo County, Lee County, and Doñana also operate a juvenile detention center.
Gotcha. And so because of that, I guess you all will accept and can take prisoners. What's the term? Probably not that term.
Offenders.
Offenders.
Juveniles. Youth.
Okay. From other counties.
Juvenile detainees.
Question.
Yeah. So we currently have 22 contracts with other counties in the state. And so we take youth from those 22 counties.
Got it. Very good. Thank you.
Well as San Juan.
Of course. Right. Locally as well. But I guess that, again, by having the centers kind of placed throughout the state, even if a family had a child, a juvenile in the facility here in San Juan County, the idea is they wouldn't have to drive across the entire state, maybe just a couple of hours instead of 8 hours.
Correct.
To see their loved one or what have you.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, ideally, kids stay in their community.
Right.
Or they're detained in a facility that's close to their community. That doesn't always happen. It's just not always feasible. And so at times we'll have youth from as far away as Carlsbad.
Right. Very true. And Shane Starr, I want to talk to you a little bit too about the work that you do and the facility in San Juan County and some of the youth that are coming there. They are there awaiting their adjudication, I guess, through the criminal justice system. Is that kind of what the situation is for these youth?
Yeah, absolutely. We just house juveniles that come in contact and commit crimes that require them to be detained, and we'll hold them as long as they're there through their judicial process.
Right. And in the meantime, I guess they are dealing with other things too. We were talking before we came on the air this morning about they all have chores to do while they're there, responsibilities, school, I guess, still doesn't stop even if you're in custody?
No, we're in agreement with Farmington Municipal Schools, and they provide us with a certified school teacher, teaching assistants. We have a few on campus, and we also have a school secretary registrar for them, and they can earn credits at their own pace, and they're even on a platform that can help them get back some credits that they have missed or have fallen behind.
Okay. I guess to maybe help them graduate eventually, maybe, is the idea?
That's the goal.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, if we can help them get closer to graduation or assist in any higher education, we can do that.
Right. Very good. Bowen, I'm going to come back to you a little bit about these youth that are at the facility and about some of their, I guess as they're waiting for their court cases and things like that. Again, the idea is to have facilities like this to try to help these youth maybe choose a different path, a better path moving forward. Is that kind of part of the work that you all do as well?
Absolutely.
And what does that involve, I guess? Is there some counseling available and things like that for these kids?
Yes. So we provide, the full array of mental health services, counseling, psychiatric, like Shane mentioned, education.
Right.
You know, a lot of the kids are on IEPs, so we have special ed services.
Those individual educational plans, I
yes,
think,
sir.
Is that acronym.
Yeah, yeah. So we cover all that, and we have some great partnerships. You know, Shane mentioned Farmington Municipal Schools. We're a satellite school, and they provide us with a lot. And so we're able to facilitate an educational setting that's just like, you know, if you were at a regular school.
Mm-hmm. Got it. And you've got, we talked about census and the numbers of folks that are up there. You've got about, what, 20, 25, 22?
Yeah, we usually, our average is around 22. That's the typical population. It can fluctuate either way, but that's typically what we're working with.
Got you. And the capacity is a bit more than that, though.
The capacity, it's a 47-bed facility. It's comprised of 4 10-bed living units. The other 7 cells or rooms are intake and medical.
I see. Got it. Okay. Interesting. And then they can stay for, I guess, as long as they need to stay court cases is moving through the system. Is that the idea?
They stay for as long as the judge says so.
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, but that means until their case is completed and they're all pre-adjudicated, so going through the court process until their case is finalized.
Right. And is that I guess it's hard to maybe say how long that could be, but on average, is it about a year? Is it?
Does well, on average, the length of stay on average is about, 30 days.
I see.
And we want, statewide, we want those stays to be shorter.
Mm-hmm.
But if the youth has a serious charge, they can certainly be there for up to a year or longer.
Right. Okay. Interesting. And that's, we talked about that too. I wanted to talk to you with the audience too here about those serious charges. And it seems like maybe you see youth with more serious charges from outside of San Juan County, not necessarily youth with serious charges being arrested here in San Juan County. Is that what you're seeing?
Yes. So typically youth here in San Juan County, we're not seeing a lot of serious offenses. I mean, it does happen, but
sure.
It's not the norm. However, some of the other counties we partner with have more youth committing serious crimes. So it's pretty normal to have some youth in the facility that are there for, a charge of murder.
Right. And certainly we've seen that locally too. There certainly have been some youth in San Juan County who face those charges, but it's not the norm, as you said.
It's infrequent.
Right. Right, which is a good thing. And again, you've got the other facilities that are there. I want to talk, too, a little bit about the other facilities besides the juvenile detention center, because there are other things that are available on that campus, the shelter being one of them, correct?
Right. So we also operate a youth crisis shelter. And as I said, that serves youth from age 9 up to 18. And those are youth that are either in, they've had some kind of contact with law enforcement. It may not be criminal in nature. But the thinking was when they opened the shelter, you know, let's provide a resource for law enforcement. So when they do come in contact with youth and they can't locate the guardian or parent, they're not tied up, you know, for extended periods and not able to, you know, get back out and serve the public. So let's have a place where law enforcement can bring youth a safe place and refer them to us. And then we will take them in and then, you know, locate the parent or guardian.
I see.
We also work with our local protective service office and do have kids at the shelter that are in custody. And that might be because they've been removed for allegations of abuse, why the agency investigates that, or they've been in custody and they don't have a placement. So the shelter's a little bit of a stopover while they try to find a more long-term appropriate situation for them.
Gotcha. Right. And I asked you before a little bit, before we came on the air this morning, a little bit about if that was similar to kind of what Child Haven does, and it kind of is to a certain degree.
It is. It is. You know, we're both licensed by CYFD. It's the same licensure. They typically serve the infant, toddler, preteen, and we do more of the teenage youth.
Right. Right. Very good. I want to ask you both a little bit about any misconceptions maybe that the public might have about the work that you all do and some of the things like that. Shane, let me come back to you and ask you a bit about some things that you have to maybe deal with. Any misconceptions that maybe the public has about juvenile services?
Well, I just don't, unless you have a family member or a friend that's actually been through the juvenile justice program, you don't really know about what goes on in the jail. Probation, court hearings, and so forth. But one of the misconceptions I want to stress is we have these kids doing programming. They're not just sitting in a cell waiting to get released. They, like Bowen said, we have education. We have program coming in. We have chaplain services that volunteer their time to come in and see these kids upon request, and we actually have a program facilitator that can help these kids with basic life skills, exercise regimen, anything like that.
I see. So. Got it. And maybe folks don't realize that if they don't have a kid involved.
Exactly.
Because of that. Bowen, what about for you? Any misconceptions that you deal with the, maybe the public?
You know, I think Shane covered it. You know, most people just, I don't think most people give it a thought, like mm-hmm. you said, until they have a child or a family member or a friend involved in the juvenile justice system. And I just want to reiterate, you know, I think what Shane said, that the people think they just are locked in a cell and that's not what we do. And that's not how the expectation is either. We're mandated to provide these things. They have to be involved in education. They have to be involved in other educational opportunities. And then, you know, just trying to expose them to things to try to divert them from the current path that they're on, trying to, you know, get their light bulb to go on and get them to change course. And so we do a lot of work while they're with us to try to influence them in that way.
Right. And I guess maybe it's evolved over the years. Would that be a correct description a little bit? Because maybe in times past, kids were maybe just put in a cell while they were awaiting a court case or something. It may be 30, 40 years ago, perhaps, or even more recent, I don't know. But would you agree with that, things are evolving when it comes to juvenile detention?
Things have changed dramatically in 30 years. And you're right. You know, one point in time, kids were kind of warehoused, and there was a whole different process even for detaining youth. And, you know, there's been a lot of work to try to limit the number of youth that are detained and try to find other other avenues, mm-hmm. to keep them out of the juvenile justice system. And that's, you know, there's been a lot of work done in that area. And I think, you know, if you look at the numbers, you can see where the implementation of those things have decreased the population.
Right. You both have mentioned some of the programs that you have to try to maybe get these juveniles to maybe consider changing their ways, getting back on a better path than where they are, and maybe that's also somewhat new within the last few decades, I guess, of maybe not just throwing them away or just discarding them as, well, we tried. Right. And that's not the case anymore, it seems to me.
That's not the case anymore. And that's even true, you know, everyone's working together, not just the detention center, but the court, mm-hmm. The probation office. You know, we all have the same mindset in trying to divert these youth out of the juvenile justice system. And that's also, you know, the thought behind that campus, our campus, the intent is to do just that. How do we prevent and divert youth away from that campus?
Right, right. And I guess, also because they are up there on that campus with the adult detention center, not too far away. I'm sure they can see it from time to time and maybe hopefully get the idea that if they don't change their ways, that's their next maybe stop if they're not careful.
Yeah, we've had that conversation with many youth.
Yeah, so, yeah, okay. Good.
I don't know if it's very effective.
Does it sink in or it just depends, I guess?
You know, it depends. Mm-hmm. You know, every person's different. Some people it takes a lot and others get it more quickly.
Right, right. Do you see repeat offenders at your facility from time to time?
Yeah, unfortunately that's the norm. You know, these kids that are making these poor decisions, they typically tend to do it numerous times and they do come back often.
Gotcha. Shane, let me ask you a little bit about those repeat offenders then when they come back. I mean, is that something that the staff deals with differently, or is it just the same even though they've seen them before and maybe know a little bit about that juvenile?
No, yeah, we operate in a direct supervision type thing, so our staff, they really do get to know these kids, and a lot of them, they develop a professional relationship with them, so when we do see these repeat offenders come in, there's obviously a thing of disappointment, but we typically treat them all the same, mm-hmm. no matter what they're there for.
You kind of have to.
We have
right.
to.
Yeah, right.
And we give them the same opportunities, the same, we expect them to live up to our same standards. Each kid's different. We do have to deal with them a little bit different, but for the most part, the goal is the same.
I see. Got it. Let me ask you both a bit about visitation and making your juveniles available, I guess, to visit with family and things like that. That's got to be an important part of their mental health and other things as they wait, whatever they're waiting for, a court case, whatever the case may be. But that's got to be, as we were talking too, a little bit of a scheduling challenge to be able to make them accessible to family, to be able to visit. Bowen, talk to me a little bit about what you make available for families.
Sure. It's very important that they maintain those contacts, and it absolutely affects their mental health. We've got two types of kids. We've got the San Juan County kids, and then we've got the kids from elsewhere in the state. And, you know, a lot of times parents don't have the resources or the ability to travel.
Right.
You know, and so, like I mentioned, that kid from Eddy County, his parents would have to drive, you know, clear across the state. It's not realistic. So what we were able to do is create two types of visitation, one in-person and one virtual. And so we do our in-person on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. And then we have our virtual visitation Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And in a lot of ways, the virtual visitation is somewhat better because with our in-person, we only allow a certain number, whereas the virtual, you know, you could have a room full of family members.
That's true, right?
Yeah. And it's really, you know, you're still able, you're, face to face. You're able to, I mean, you might even, you know, you're going to even see your home. You're going to see where your family lives. You're going to see your parents or your relatives. And so I think it works well, and it enables the youth and the parents to maintain that important connection.
Right. Is there a frequency that you allow? I mean, or is it just, I mean, as scheduling allows?
So we have part of our program is we have a behavior modification system, and one of the things that the youth are able to earn from that, you know, through good behavior is more visits. So depending on where what their status is, they can have up to 3 visits a week. And so what families do is you know, when the youth get there, we have a case manager who is kind of our liaison with everyone, and he reaches out and he, you know, lets families know, hey, there's this opportunity, this visitation platform that we offer, and then he schedules and he keeps track of where the youth are, you know, in that level system. And so he knows, like, yeah, you know, Johnny already had his 2 for the week. But he schedules all those visits.
Got it.
And it works well.
Right. And I guess if you've got a youth that maybe isn't doing well, or maybe a little disruptive or things like that, are there some things that you can maybe take away from them? Maybe like a visitation or something, maybe to just say, you know, we need you to really kind of straighten up and follow the rules, or this goes away.
Yeah, exactly. We can, you know, restrict the visits, phone calls, you know, they get commissary. Mm-hmm. So yes, there's things that we can use to try to get them to, you know, stay on task and participate appropriately.
Right. And you mentioned that kind of living situation, that they are not in a cell, if you will, by themselves, right? They are in a group of other youth, right?
Correct.
About 10 people?
Yeah, we have 4 10-bed living units. Yeah. And so each youth is assigned a room in one of those units. And then, like Shane mentioned, we utilize a process called direct supervision, and that what that requires is that, you know, an adult staff is in that unit with the youth during all the, you know, the hours that they're not sleeping.
Right.
So they're always have that engagement with staff, and, you know, and they're always supervised.
Gotcha. And if there is a youth that is maybe misbehaving or not following the rules, I guess is there a time that you could separate them out from the rest of the group to get them, so that they're not either injuring other youth or just, you know, out of control or whatever the case may be?
Right. If they are such a disruption to the rest of the group, then we do have, yeah, we absolutely have that ability to remove them, you know, for a period. Because mm-hmm. the goal is always to get them back in the unit and back with the group, participating in, you know, the different programs that we have.
Right. Understood. My guest this morning from San Juan County Juvenile Services, just a couple of minutes remaining this morning. Gentlemen, I wanted to ask you too about funding. This is a county facility. Is there some state funds involved too, since it's just one of a few in the state? Or does the county support what you do?
The county taxpayers support what we do. And so we don't take that lightly. And we understand the importance of, you know, being good stewards of those tax dollars and using them to the best benefit of the community. You know, we are able to offset our costs somewhat by the revenue that we do generate from the out-of-county contracts.
I was going to ask you, get some money from Eddie County?
Right, yeah.
So wherever?
Yes, yeah. So we do charge a per diem rate, and yeah, it's helpful in offsetting, you know, the cost to run the facility.
Gotcha. But the county really does pay the majority of the bills, sounds like to me.
Yes, the county pays the majority of the bills.
And by that, we mean county taxpayers.
Yes, sir. Yes, gotcha. Sir.
Very good. Well, gentlemen, thank you both for coming in this morning. I think we've all learned a lot about the work that you all do, and I think it's really important work for the youth of San Juan County to really try to get them maybe back on the correct path if they have gone off a little astray. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. My guest this morning from San Juan County Juvenile Services with me here on KSJE. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.